Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Thomas Herschel, who's the Director of the Population and Development Program and a Professor of Development Sociology at Cornell University. He's just published or co-authored a new report at the Associated Press on the widening gap of wealth inequality in the United States, where 4 out of 5 adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Herschel.
Thanks for inviting me in.
And the new study that you have been in, one of the co-authors of, there are other authors as well. A lot of research has clearly gone into this, but it does really explode the kind of idea that we've had about how American poverty has been gauged in previous sort of official reports, if you will. So tell us about, the methodology here and why all of a sudden your report is indicating that everything we thought about this country is wrong, that we've had an extremely exaggerated and glossy idea about the American dream and the lives of the majority of our citizens. Things are, according to your report, a lot worse than they have been portrayed.
Well, what we did, Ian, was we decided we wanted to put time into our analysis. And so we found a data set on 5,000 families that was maintained for 42 years. And so we observed these 5,000 families as they changed over time, had children, the children stayed in the study. And what we found was that when you track people over time like this, you get a very different impression of what their lives are like. Official data from the Census Bureau, now this is a study that's housed at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. It's a very, very, very well-done data set, very, very good methodology. But when you look over time, you see that it's typical for Americans to encounter at least one year where the family head is unemployed, or where people are in poverty, or where they're relying on a social safety net to get by. And that's surprising because this is not part of the social discourse that we have in the country, where 4 out of 5 Americans are experiencing serious hard times, at least. And of course, many people get it for more than one year. And so, you know, our study kind of encapsulates those kind of statistics.
So the bottom line here is that poverty is not about them, it's about us.
That's correct. Poverty is really something that's being driven, I think, by our market society, that, people are maybe doing really well for a few years, things are going well, and then suddenly somebody loses a job, or somebody falls off a roof, or something happens where someone goes in the hospital in the family. And then people tumble, and they have these one or more years of hard times. And I think that as we see the dynamics of the market economy intensifying in the context of, you know, the global crisis, of the financial crisis, and all the things that are going on in the world right now, we really see a need not just for politicians to fix things with policy, but for some kind of new economic system. And I think that economic system really needs to be demanded by the people that are not doing so well. And those are the people that are not really part of the discourse. A lot of the discourse is about people at the top, the celebrities, people making lots of money. That's really what dominates American culture.
But what you've found out in your new study for the Associated Press, Thomas Herschel, is that economic insecurity amongst whites is more pervasive than is shown in the government's poverty data, and it affects more than 76% of white adults by the time they turn 60. Now, what I find extraordinary about that is that, of course, that President Obama has a problem with poor white people in this country, and many don't see themselves as being poor and white. In November, Obama won the votes of just 36% of what's called non-college whites, which is the worst performance since Ronald Reagan's landslide victory over Walter Mondale. This seems to me to be really an interesting irony, isn't it, that the president, who just made an impassioned speech this week saying that he's going to dedicate the rest of his term in office to making America work again for working Americans, And that the people in this country that most dislike this president are the ones that are being most affected by poverty and joblessness, even if they don't recognize it.
That is quite an irony, Ian. I think part of that is just what we could call the politics of race, the fact that the president is black, and that there's, especially in the southern region of the United States, we see a lot of manipulation of voting districts and a kind of politics where race and class and sometimes even religion is thrown in. People get divided along certain lines socially, and they're not able to maybe really see the broader picture of what's happening in the country. And I think there's a history of this that goes back, well, you know, to the beginning of the country, and it really hasn't ended. And I think, in effect, the Supreme Court is really kind of ramping that up with its discrediting of the enforcement procedures of the Voting Rights Act. That this makes that even more likely to happen. This kind of people seeing the country through a racial lens rather than through the lens of their own experience. And I think it's a very serious situation.
And of course, the Trayvon Martin verdict brought that into light and have inflamed that divide. And of course, obviously, it's the idea that somebody got away with murder is very disturbing for a lot of people. Now,
it's very disturbing, especially murder of a child. I mean, that, to me, that's about the worst thing I can imagine.
Right. So you know, we have there's the economy, and then there's the society, and the president himself, in an interview in Sunday's New York Times, is concerned that the income gap is fraying the U.S. social fabric. He made allusions to racial tensions, etc., in his interview with the New York Times. So they're inextricably bound. In many ways, it would seem that what your report is showing, Thomas Herschel, is that they are a distraction from the economic realities, and that if everybody in this country who's economically disadvantaged woke up and recognized the reality, then they may get politically active in a constructive way. But where is that catalyst going to come from? Are they going to listen to a black president?
Well, I think it may be a black president. I think really there needs to be some kind of alternative political party. I think both the Democrat and the Republican Party tend to be more influenced by kind of the winners of the economic game. And I feel like even though Obama is a black president, he's very much, and his rhetoric tends to focus on what he calls the middle class rather than looking at the fact that, you know, our study shows 4 out of 5, they may be members of the middle class part of the time, but they're actually not doing well. They're not members of the middle class for great parts of their lives. So I think that a new kind of discussion is needs to happen in the country that really is based on the reality of people's experience and more common things that people have.
Again, I'm speaking with Thomas Herschel, who's the director of the Population and Development Program and a professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He just co-authored a new report at the Associated Press on the widening gap of wealth inequality in the United States, where 4 out of 5 adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty. And in your study, you have the index of economic insecurity. I just mentioned that's engulfing 76% of white adults by the time they're 60. And the gauge defines economic insecurity as a year or more of periodic joblessness, reliance on government aid, such as food stamps, etc., and an income below 150% of the poverty line measured across all races. And if you do that, the risk of economic insecurity rises to 79%. So this is a stunning statistic. And I guess the reason that we don't recognize the reality of poverty and how pervasive it is with working Americans, I think is a better term than certainly the present middle class Americans, is that starting with Reagan, incomes have not gone up. They've been flat since the Carter administration, and that what the establishment, for the want of a better description, have done, starting under Reagan and accelerating with Alan Greenspan, was that they made credit incredibly available for working Americans to give them the illusion that their standard of living, while their wages were flat, to give them the illusion that their standard of living was raising, making credit available where the banks get their money for what, less than 1% from the Fed, and they charge it back at 18.5%. And then you've got the Walmart factor, where all this cheap stuff from China is, you can go and buy that. So you feel like you're still in the middle class by being able to shop on borrowed money, right? Is that what's kept the illusion?
I think that, there's definitely a game that's being played. I think it actually goes back to the early 1970s. Our study begins in 1968, and we've kind of captured this period. And this period of time has been a period of actually the top end of the income distribution has been monopolizing a greater share of the total income through rising affluence. And so you have a lot of people. It was actually rather uncommon for people to make more than $200,000 a year when our study started. That's been going up quite steadily. So you have a group of about 10 to 20% of the country that's experiencing rising wealth and income, and then the bottom 70 to 80% are experiencing, or they're stagnating, as you suggested, which is the majority. And I think that you're right that people are able to borrow and to get their kids to college on borrowed money, to borrow to pay for to use their house as a kind of an ATM, that there are schemes going on, but those things are wearing thin now. And I think we're starting to reach a position where people are not going to be able to go forward as easily as before. This has been going on for, 30, 40 years. So I think we're kind of coming to a day of reckoning when the people at the bottom need to have the rules of the game need to be changed. And I think it's difficult for politicians to really make that happen, given the way the politics is conducted in the country right now. And so I think some new kind of, something like the Green Party or some alternative political formation needs to begin to start to have a voice in the discourse so that people can start to address situations from where they're at rather than from where they're projected in the public discourse as it's constituted right now.
And just adding insult to injury, you have the new phenomenon of student debt. So the young kids getting an education, pay for it on loans, which they have to pay back, and now the interest rates doubled on federal loans, and they get more and more indentured as their less and less job prospects emerge. And if you just watch what's just happened with the bankruptcy of the city of Detroit, you recognize that the notion of a social contract in this country is absolutely, compared to the social democracies in Europe and Australia and elsewhere, is just shocking. It's never really had been there. But now what's left of it is being eviscerated, and the pensioners and the public employees in Detroit are going to lose their pensions. Meanwhile, the city of Detroit is fully funding a $400 million arena for the Detroit Red Wings. So,
yeah, for hockey.
There you have the priorities of government today to take care of the people who take care of the politicians. I mean, I guess at the heart
that's
of it.
That's exactly it. That's it. You nailed it, Ian. I really think that's an important point. And I think the problem is that the 4 out of 5 Americans that are experiencing hardship, they don't really have an organized voice that's in the discourse. And I think people need to think about things before they act. And we can't think about things until we can talk them over and write about them, put them on blogs. I mean, there appears to be lots of freedom on the Internet to say these things, but I think actually discourse is relatively constrained by the more privileged elements of society. And so it's very, very difficult to do this, and I think we need voice to change the direction of the country and somehow. I mean, I think we have a situation where we have, a robot can make a car, but a robot can't buy a car. I mean, that's really, I think, a good problem to have. We just need to get the robots working in the public interest and have some kind of society that produces for everyone, not just for the 5-10% that are benefiting.
So how can our audience get hold of this new study that you and your colleagues have done for the Associated Press?
Well, our study is being published as a book next year by Oxford University Press. we did the work the last year or so, and it's coming out as a book with Professor Mark Rank and myself. And so that will be available commercially next year. The study is kind of an advanced look at some of our findings in the study, where we look at not just the poverty but also the wealth of America. And we also really talk to people a lot. We do a lot of interviews to really try to understand how people are processing their experience, because I think that's really important. It's not just about numbers. It's also about what people think and what they're feeling, and trying to gauge that and get a sense of how to move forward.
But what's happening in America is that the racial and class divides are being stirred up, arguably by the same establishment that's stealing the country blind. Meanwhile, the people, the 80% who are getting shafted, are being distracted by this and not getting together and forming a more perfect union to participate in the American dream that was promised to them.
I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. That's why our title is about chasing the dream, because I don't think that we've really caught up with it yet. I think we're still chasing it, and I think that we can catch it because we are the majority right now. We're 4 out of 5, and I think it's within our grasp, but we have to, so we need to begin communicating in new ways and to begin organizing in new ways to turn the country around, I guess.
So what can, if people can't get your book now, what are the, I guess they can, this is at the Associated Press, this digest of the study, right?
That's right. There is a report which has some of the numbers from one of our chapters at the Associated Press.
Okay. Well, I thank you for joining us. I mean, I think this is some of the most important things. And of course, we know that there's a huge battle over the debt ceiling that's going to be coming up. We'll visit that again. And
right,
you know, and of course, the president has now finally given up on talking about this complete distraction known as the deficit, and which has always been a ruse to cut taxes on the rich. Now,
exactly.
Now at least he's starting to talk about the real economy, the one that you've talked about with 80% of Americans,
right.
4 or 5 living in poverty. Well, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Thomas Herschel, the director of the Population Development Program and a professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He has just authored a new report at the Associated Press on the widening gap of wealth inequality in the United States, where 4 out of 5 adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with a broadcast from September the 1st, 2013, about the scandal of CEO pay in America.